White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 640.
This is Sonny Smith, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
The Auburn crowd can smell it. They can taste it. They can almost see Minneapolis.
I'm not even hungry, and I can taste it.
The Auburn Tigers, for the first time ever, are going to the Final Four.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, an abbreviated edition coming in the week after the 4th of July, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've had a lot going on. It's the 4th of July. It was last weekend, and there's vacations going on and everything. We're getting ready to do some interviews. We've got the barbecue show coming up. But the book is finally done. It is being released to our patrons, theoretically even now, unless something has happened at the last minute to slow it down. And so if you are a patron of the AU Wishbone, then you can get you a copy right now. And if you would like to get a copy, well, you could wait until October or November, or you could go ahead and join up and become a patron. Go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and sign up, become a patron, and you will have access to the way to order a book. So we want to just talk for a little bit in this episode about the book and some of the things that we found in it and some of the fun we had putting it together. It's a different book in some ways from the We Believe football book, and in some ways it's kind of similar. So, I mean, let me just ask you up front first, though, kind of what were your thoughts at the beginning and then as this evolved about doing a book like this? I'm just curious because we haven't really talked. We just kind of jumped in and started doing it.
It's fair. I think when we started, I was caught up in the excitement of the current basketball season. Sure. And I kind of had, like a lot of Auburn fans, I kind of had basketball fever. Mm-hmm. You know, like the team was great and they were incredibly fun. And we were having a good time. And they were, you know, one of the best teams ever to play for Auburn. And we were just enjoying every week watching them play. And so it made me think about all the other good times that we've had watching Auburn basketball and kind of the ups and downs and how we got to that place. So that's what I thought about when we got into it, is kind of the joy that we were experiencing then, but also the relative to the other joy that we have experienced in Auburn basketball history.
A couple of things come to mind when you say that. When we talked in the past about doing something for Auburn basketball like this, I would think, well, we can talk about the 86 team. We can talk about Barkley. You know, we can talk about the Final Four team. But, you know, that's not going to be much of a book. But what this ended up being is a rich, detailed, I don't know of any other work like this that exists, 300 pages of basically everything involving Auburn basketball from 1978 to the present. I mean, if there's anything that's not in there, we missed it. But I know, for my part, I went and looked for, I turned over every rock, every stone behind every bush to find every interesting, noteworthy, historical, entertaining tidbit, story, factoid, narrative that could be put in there. So it's in there. It's like EA Sports. It's in the game. It's in the book.
Why did we hire the particular coach that we did at the time we hired him? It's in the book.
It's in the book. Yeah, I said on Twitter today, I said so-and-so. I said, yeah, that's in the book. I said, I'm going to be saying that a lot for a while because it's, you know, and I was even talking about the book on Twitter and people were saying, oh, well, don't forget this. I'm like, oh, yeah. So there were actually people suggesting things to us over the course of writing the book and having our conversations that went into the book that we might have missed otherwise, you know. So it is what you call comprehensive. Again, I don't know if this is the thing. When we did we've done three books on Auburn football so far. There's a lot of books on Auburn football. I don't know of any other work like this. Do you? Am I missing one?
No. Not that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's it covers everything from 1978 to the present. And the other thing, you know, you just mentioned that it was because we had basketball fever, and that's absolutely true. And I always like to say that one, what's the word I'm looking for? Not highlight, but one thing that designates and indicates professionalism is that you can work on something even when you're no longer excited about it, just to do it, to finish it, to wrap it up mm-hmm. and make it good. And the reader shouldn't be able to tell how much enthusiasm you had in one point versus another. It should be great all the way through.
Yes.
The trick wasn't to write a book about Auburn basketball in February. The trick was to write a book about Auburn basketball in June. And it has taken this long. And it's still not quite done as of this recording, but by the time this show airs, it will be done. That was the trick, was to maintain the enthusiasm and find things to keep it interesting and going all the way into June. And I think that we have. So, there's a few things that we can talk about. We've talked about Sonny Smith a good bit on here. And obviously, Bruce Pearl is very recent, and we know all these stories. But I was just thinking, you know, one of the things that we discovered along the way were some really cool Charles Barkley stories. And I was just trying to think, because I don't have it right in front of me. I don't want to go digging through the Word file. But things that stand out for me, did we talk about when Barkley tried to lose weight and gain weight really fast? This is pretty good.
I don't think we've talked about that on the podcast, and I like that part.
All right, so Charles found out that the Philadelphia 76ers were going to draft him. Well, I may have this slightly out of order, but it doesn't matter, right? It's a Charles Barkley story. Don't worry about the details. It's a Charles Barkley story. You'll enjoy it. So when he was going to go to the NBA first, he decided to turn pro, which really, I think he made that decision when he went off to the Olympic trials with Bobby Knight, because when he was at the Olympic trials with Bobby Knight, we have so many good quotes from other players who were at that Olympic trial. Like Joe Dumars of the Pistons is like, man, when Barkley comes down the court, he'll just shove you into the bleachers. But he does apologize later. He says he's sorry later after you climb out of the bleachers and you're bleeding and bruised up. He's like, sorry, man, you know. There are just so many good quotes like that from big-time NBA players who were at that Olympic trial. And Charles said, and everybody else said, he was the second most impressive player there other than Jordan. And he didn't end up getting picked because he and Bobby Knight didn't get along. And there's this one story where Bobby Knight had told them all, you know, don't be a minute late, don't be 30 seconds late. We're all going to be here on time for our meetings. You know, Bobby Knight, right? He thinks he's in the Army. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's in the Army and they're his soldiers. He's like, nobody, I'm not putting up with it. You're all going to be here on time. And so Barkley said they're all there waiting, and Knight showed up 10 minutes late. And Knight walks in and the room is deathly silent. Michael Jordan doesn't say anything, you know. All those other players, there were some really good players there. None of them say a word. And then Barkley goes, hey, Knight, what's up with 10 minutes late? Bobby Knight is like, you fat son of a bleep, 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 starts dog cussing him. And Barkley's cussing him back. And now I think we know why Barkley didn't end up on the Olympic team, even though he was the second best player. He told Barkley, they asked Bobby Knight Charles called him up and said, how much do you want me to weigh when I come in? And Bobby Knight said, I didn't tell him an answer because I wanted the answer to be like 215, and he was at like 315. So to finish out the other quick story, and then we'll see if there's anything else we want to talk about on it. So when Barkley decides to go to the NBA after those events, he starts trying to lose weight, and he goes on an all juice and apple diet, and he ended up in the hospital. He went on this crash juice diet and ended up in the hospital. Then he finds out that the Philadelphia 76ers have the first pick and they have some kind of financial issues, and the word gets out to Charles that they will only be able to pay him $70,000. And Barkley's quote was, I didn't leave college for $70,000. So Charles decides he does not want the Sixers to choose him, to draft him. So he and his agent, I think, or his friend or somebody, they went out and they went to like IHOP or Waffle House or something. And he spent the entire day eating. Now, he said before, he doesn't eat a lot in one meal. He just never really stops eating. He's like, yeah, I just am always eating. It's never like I sit down and eat a whole turkey or something, but I'm always eating. Well, that day he was like eating whole turkeys all day. He was just eating, you know, stacks of waffles and pancakes. His goal was to gain so much weight in 24 hours that when he showed up for his physical, they wouldn't take him. And he gained like 75 pounds in one day. He was at like 315 when he reported. And then they drafted him anyway. And he says, if you watch the video, and I don't think I've done this, but if it's out there on YouTube or whatever, he says, if you watch the video of me getting drafted by the Sixers, my expression is, what? They're still drafting me? Because he didn't want to. But he said that then they kind of went back and did some kind of salary cap maneuver or something. And they were ending up able to pay him like $2 million for his first contract. So he didn't get $70,000. He got $2 million. But then, of course, when he goes to the Sixers, he's horribly out of shape and huge. And Moses Malone makes fun of him and Dr. J makes fun of him. And they had to learn, like Sonny did, that you look at Charles back then and you think he can't run, he can't jump. And then he runs and he jumps and you can't stop him. So, you know, Sonny talked about that in our interview that we posted here a while back, that he didn't really understand at the time what Barkley could do at any weight. At any weight. Yeah. So there's my little Barkley story.
And it's a good story. And I think it shows kind of what kind of person he is. But I mean, again, what I thought about when you said that is, man, like sports nutrition does come a long way.
Come a long way. Oh, man. Sports nutritionists listening to this show right now are having heart attacks. They're just like pulling their hair out thinking about Charles doing that. Crash diet to lose weight, then turns around and puts on like 75 pounds.
But also, if he'd had the kind of, you know, food options athletes have now, he'd have been in better shape in college.
Oh, yeah. And weight, strength and conditioning programs and everything. I mean, I wonder what Charles would have looked like. Like, there was a quote where he says, I just eat all the time. And a lot of this on the outer surface of me is that fat. He said, if I were to peel this off, I'd look like Hercules. And I mean, I think there's something to that. He means he was a really muscular, big, strong guy. He just had some flab kind of draped over it like a tank top, you know. But he was
like Hercules lion thing around.
Lion so. Mane. Yeah. His cloak. That's right. So, oh, man. Are there any, that's kind of like a classic Barkley's. This is like one page out of the 300 pages of the book.
Well, and I would say that's a great story. And the other one I think about is, again, when he did go to the Olympics, when the NBA went to the Olympics in 1992 and he was part of the Dream Team, you know, I think he took it more seriously than the other players because he had not gotten to go before.
That's a great point. Yeah, everybody around him had been there before. Yeah.
Yeah, they were on that team or later, mm-hmm. The 4 years after that team. And he was not. He was had not gotten the opportunity to represent the United States in the Olympics. And it was the first time that NBA players were part of it. And so he was on that team with, you know, Magic and Michael Jordan and
Bird
all these guys. And he was not going to lose. They were not going to lose. And he was not going to allow them to lose. And he was widely recognized as the best player in that tournament. He played the best of anybody. And then entire tournament, he was at the peak of his ability at that point.
That was the 92 Barcelona, the Dream Team. In 96 in Atlanta, he shot even better. I tweeted that out today. 86.3 or something, 86.1, 86.3% shooting in Atlanta. And that was in 96 it wasn't the end of his career, but it wasn't far from it.
Yeah, he'd been in the NBA 12 or 13 years at that point. So
yeah, and was still just dominant. My favorite from the 92 team, when they were about to play Angola, bunch of scrawny guys, right? They're playing Angola, and they asked Charles at the press conference about it. And he says, I don't know where Angola is, but I know they're in trouble. And that's the game where two things happened. One, he put an Angola player in the bleachers during the game.
He dunked on him so hard he like blew him into the bleachers.
He said the guy shoved me. And then it's also that moment which they showed on the replay where Charles is running back down the court after scoring or something, and the little scrawny Angolan guy is running along next to him. Charles reaches over, grabs the guy's wrist, and hits himself in the chest with it, and then looks at the referee like, "Hey, ref, he fouled me." And it's like, do you really? I mean, I could see you doing that to Larry Bird in a playoff game, but when you're beating Angola like 120-35, do you really need to create a fake foul? That poor little Angola guy was like, "Oh man!" Oh, that was another line, by the way, about those exact same thing. It was at that Olympic trial. One of the other like all-star national players at the 84 Olympic trial said the first time that I was on the court with Charles, he body slammed me like back 10 feet. He said, after that, I've been trying to make friends with him. So yeah, it was probably wise to make friends with Charles.
Yeah. But also I think people, because he played at Auburn, and we weren't on TV as much back then and that kind of stuff, I think some of these other players didn't know how good he was either.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody understood really how good he was. And there's a couple of things in the book about that too, about like when he didn't even go on Arsenio Hall's show. He was in the audience and Arsenio went up and talked to him and didn't know where he went to college. And when he told him, he was just like, huh? Cause he had no memory of seeing, you know, I think that Arsenio thought that Charles was going to say Duke or something, you know, and Arsenio would be like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. He said Auburn and Arsenio was kind of like, oh, like I have no idea where that is or who, you know, I've never seen you play. So for a lot of the country, Charles Barkley was almost like, what's his name with the Lakers, you know, that passed away last year, in the helicopter crash.
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, he was like Kobe Bryant in the sense that he didn't go to a lot of the country, Charles Barkley didn't go to college. He just appeared one day on the Sixers, like out of nowhere. And I hate that. I hate that. But, I mean, that was just the situation he was in. He didn't get, you know, he didn't have Kansas and UCLA breaking down his door in Leeds, Alabama, because nobody knew what he could do.
And Auburn did not get the national television exposure we do now. There was no SEC big TV deal like that. There was like one game, two games a week on or whatever. And it was mostly Kentucky. So,
and we could have in the NCAA tournament, but his team lost in the first round to Richmond. And so he never got the opportunity to be in the Final Four, to be, you know, and it's funny when Auburn found out about him in Leeds, they weren't scouting him. They were scouting somebody else. You know, it's that same classic story like we ended up with Rudy Johnson because the scout went to see the quarterback, Cobb.
Yeah.
And Cobb was handing the ball to Rudy Johnson. And the Auburn guy is like, who's that running back, man? And then we get Rudy Johnson. Well, it's the same thing here. The Sonny sent the assistant coach. I can't remember which one it was now. But Sonny sent one of the assistant coaches to Leeds to scout somebody else. And they came back and told Sonny, there's this guy on this team you have to see to believe. But because Barkley was like 6'4 and not 6'8, he had just not attracted, you know, the attention that he should have.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was, you know, he didn't have as many options as he would have.
But also, because of his height, he was kind of a unicorn basketball player. He was a one of a kind. But nobody that size led the NBA in rebounding multiple times. It just did not happen.
No, that's right. Just incredible. So, yeah, so there's some cool Charles Barkley stories for you. And we have Sonny Smith stories. We have Bruce Pearl stories. There's a great story about how Jay Jacobs went and got Bruce Pearl. I didn't know all the details of this, but we put them in there. And then John and I, of course, are having our conversation all the way through the book. This is what I think works so well with We Believed, is where we present the factual information and then you and I have like an ongoing commentary about it all the way through it, so that you get not only like what happened, but then kind of how two big diehard Auburn fans felt about it at the time and how we feel about it now. So it's more alive than just a dull, dry history book. And I think that's important.
Very.
Yeah. We kind of pioneered the hybrid oral history / actual history sports book. I think we've kind of invented something new here, or at least new to us.
And I think it's it works. Like, I think that we have a lot of firsthand memories of a lot of these games, and so and these events and these players and coaches. So I think that's the value we can really bring to make it relatable to Auburn fans who are reading the book.
Yeah, you wouldn't want the whole book to be just us talking, because that's the podcast. You can listen to the podcast for that. And you wouldn't want the whole book to just be dry history, because that's boring. Go to Wikipedia or something. It's the combination of the two. Like, every page is like half, here's what happened, and then half, here's what we remember, here's what we think about it, here's how we evaluate it now and what it means. So it's got a lot of that, a lot of depth to it in that way. So, all right, any other, anything else? I'm going to give kind of some information right now we've given before to wrap up on kind of how people can get the book. But is there anything else we need to talk about from it?
No, other than I think we're both pretty happy with it. I think it's going to be exciting, and I can't wait for people to read it and tell us how they feel about it.
Yeah, I always love feedback. Love to hear what people think about it, for sure. We Believed got great reviews on Amazon and everything. Yeah. And from people that I sent advanced copies to, we got back really good reviews. And I think it's the best reviewed book of the three that we've done so far. And I think this one might be right up there. We'll see. All right. So if you want to get it, like I said, if you become a patron anytime going forward, immediately you'll have access to how to order it. Dragon Con is in Atlanta, September 1 through 4. That's Labor Day weekend this coming into the summer. I will have copies on my table on Pop Artist Alley, and I also do a reading and autograph session. I'll have copies there. And while you're there, you can meet Jared, the yard sale artist, who does our Guess the Game segment. He's always there at the table next to me. Usually several other of our folks are there. Mira will be there, the voice of the AU Wishbone currently. And I think probably Kathy Bright is usually there with us. She's awesome, hanging out and helping us out and doing great stuff. So you can meet quite a, and maybe Delvin shows up, I don't know, but you can meet quite a bit of the crew. One of these days, I always say, one of these days we're going to get John to come down. We'll see what happens. But you'll see some of us there, and I will have copies there. If you don't get it as a patron and you don't get it at Dragon Con, you will have to wait until October or November when John and I do our official bookstore signing at the AU Bookstore in Auburn. That's when it will go on sale on Amazon and be available through bookstores. So become a patron, go to Dragon Con, or pick it up at the end of the year. John, this is a pretty, you know, we try to give bonuses to our patrons. Being able to get this book like 3 months in advance is a pretty nice premium.
It's a good thing. Again, we value you and we try to show it.
Yeah. All right. So that's that. We're going to get on out of here, and we will see you next Monday with a brand new full-on show with something brand new and lots to talk about. And in the meantime, War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.